The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Happy Friday. It is December 1st. We are in the final slide to the finish line of 2023. December 1st here. Heidi Hatch with KUTV 2 News. Mara Carabello is off having fun without us today. Scott Howell filling her chair. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, I'm having fun now that I'm here.
So. And we have Greg Hughes. So I'm did you guys serve together in the house or did your
ears
not?
But boy, but, hey, but we got, we've been in trenches together. Boy, we worked on some really good issues together, Scott and I. We worked on this Operation Rio Grande on the homeless issue, showing that it was, you know, just that whole issue doesn't really fall into parties' platforms. It's just like, we just love public safety and we don't like drug cartels. It's an amazing, you know, amazing journey. You know?
Minor things like drug
just
cartels.
Like that, you know, we don't like murder. We don't like, you know,
rape, incest, human trafficking. Yeah, it's all of that.
Just, it just seemed to have some, you know, common ground.
Do you know what I like about you two, though? You can work in the trenches, but you're also bougie. You both just left the Alta Club.
Yeah.
I've never hung out at the Alta Club.
It's a new word. Yeah, it's my little secret.
It's your secret lair.
No, so I'm a member there, but it's always been my quiet private joke that they let this white trash kid from Pittsburgh into their hoity-toity club. So, yeah.
And I'm a Democrat. I don't have enough money to join, so I tag on to Greg.
No, but I wasn't there because I was just hanging out. I was actually there because the Elephant Club, which is a fundraising and networking wing of the Utah State Republican Party, they had invited new Speaker of the House Mike Schultz, past Speaker Brad Wilson, and myself, the three of us, to talk about the role of
the
Speaker
of the House.
It's a lot
of speakers in one room.
But Brad got sick, so Brad didn't make it. So it was just Speaker Schultz, Mike Schultz, and myself, and we shared some war stories. And it's fun because we are two, the three of us. It would have been fun if it was the three of us, but we all have worked together. We were all in a team together, so we have that in common. And that's, if you look at least those speakers that are alive right now, I don't know that you'd have that succession.
No, I don't think you would.
And before we ruin your reputation, you were not hanging out at the Elephant Club today.
Yeah. Although I will confess, I've been to quite a few of their meetings as a guest.
Being a spy doesn't count. So you're not supposed to be there taking copious notes on how to defeat the Republicans.
They actually had me introduce myself every time I go. And I really wanted to go to this one today. I got an invitation, but I had a previous commitment for a luncheon meeting over there. And Leslie, their executive vice president, didn't call me personally and say, well, Greg would like you to be there. And we're glad you're here today,
Leslie.
Yeah,
she's here now. She's eyeballing you.
Yeah, I know. We should come put her in a chair. If you want to say something, just wave your hand and we'll turn on another mic.
Yeah. And then I'll turn off Greg. So
we don't want to outweigh you.
So glad you're here today. What have you been up to of late that we should know about? You're wearing your Salt Lake 2002 Winter Olympic shirt. Love that.
I had the great privilege of being on the Olympic Committee, Greg, and back then the House and the Senate each got an appointment and they appointed me to it.
Nice, very nice.
And it was a spectacular opportunity from being in Hungary when they announced, like they did here. And I can't even begin to tell you how this is just going to the reimbursement of what we get on the return of the Olympics is unbelievable.
Yeah, you're right.
It's just fantastic. And so I was thrilled to hear that it'll be in 2034. I'll be 102 back then, but they might have some handicap stuff that I could participate in.
You in Salt Lake, we worked on this when I was speaker, but we are a unique venue in the United States that, unlike Lake Placid, that we've maintained our venues, that we had, there was good stewardship during the Olympics to set money aside in a foundation that has kept our venues.
It was brilliant.
Modernized.
Yeah.
And so they are ready to go. We don't have to start from scratch, which is unique for
it's
Olympics.
Spectacular. Yeah.
Do we thank Senator Romney for that, or was it a team effort
There was a time where I would, but I would not anymore. I can't bring myself to do it.
Because you don't really think he did it, or you just
no, because he's worn me out. He's just worn me out. I'm just done.
But I'll tell you who we can thank is Senator Hatch back then, and Bob Bennett and all these people who really were on the infrastructure. And at that time, Bill Clinton was the president, and the vice president was really the guy who was most involved. And so I got to go back to Washington a lot on behalf of the state of Utah. I actually gave him an Olympic shirt, very similar to this one I've got on.
Does he have the coat the volunteers all wore that we still see around Salt Lake City?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
That's good.
And, but what really changed everything is how we got rapid transit.
Well, that's I was going to say it if you didn't. I mean, that, there was such a problem with parking, and the University of Utah was just collapsing on itself. Nobody, there was no, you couldn't build buildings because there was nowhere to park. As soon as that line, that the light rail line extended to the university, it opened that school for opportunities and buildings and facilities. It really changed things. And that was really done with our Washington delegation, but with President Clinton on that infrastructure because of the Olympics.
Yeah, and it was such a great example of collaboration where both sides of the aisle come together to do the right thing for the citizens. And that's what it was.
And I should note before we move on that we are only the preferred host. So we're like a 99% there, but not all the way there. It kind of reminds me when police, instead of having a suspect, have a person of interest. So we're like the person of interest currently, and we'll eventually be the suspect. But unless we screw something up royally, it sounds like the Olympics are ours.
And I'll tell you, one thing, I still am close with some of those Olympic members, and don't discount 2030, because the Alps, France will have their Summer Olympics, and then they don't like to have them very close together for their Winter Olympics. That could be a real possibility that we get it in 2030.
But I think for the same reason, because the L.A. Olympics are when. That's why they didn't want ours to be back to back American dollars, right? The advertising dollars. So we're kind of in that same spot, I think.
And France is the upcoming Summer Olympics, right?
Yes.
Okay.
2020, next year?
Yeah, because I've been looking, I'm headed there in the spring, which is before the Olympics, but I've noticed when you're looking at Airbnbs and stuff that you know, people are advertising for the Olympics and getting ready. So,
that's just what's going to happen in Utah. It's just such a great investment.
Heidi, does the Take Two podcast get to go to the Summer Olympics? Is that in the budget here at KUTV?
We're all going.
Okay, because there's a lot to discuss.
Yeah, Laura, you're out.
Everyone's taking a carry on. We can't afford luggage. Right. Nope. But let's go.
They got a nonstop from Salt Lake to
Paris.
Charles de Gaulle Airport, is that what it's called? So let's go.
That would be fun. Right. So, all right, I'm going to put it on the list. I do want to note before that we move on from the Olympics, though, I was kind of surprised by this because everything we're hearing generally is good news. We're excited about it. Utah Democratic Party on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it said, if we want the Olympics to come back to Utah in 2034, we need real action from Republicans on air quality. Not only does pollution harm our communities, but also harms our economy, and we could miss out on billions of dollars of investment. We're doing this podcast when it's still nasty inversion outside. You can't see the sky. I'm depressed. It's a problem we all have, but is this the right way, Scott, for Democrats to go about solving the problem? Should it be an hour problem, or is this a Republican problem because the Utah legislature hasn't done enough?
No, that's thanks for bringing that up, Heidi. It's the wrong way to set policy. What you want to do is get together with both parties, and you want to sit down. And I think that Clean Air Caucus.
Yep.
I think it's a pretty good blend of both Democrat and Republican, if I remember. Yeah. And, you know, that was just a political thing to say, oh, come out and vote for more Democrats. We'll have our air cleaned up. This is not a party. It's just like Operation Rio Grande.
Democrats don't drive cars?
I got my bike out there. So,
yeah, the bicycles.
Yeah. No.
Not grown.
It wasn't the right way to do it. Hey, but if they see a fundraising opportunity or they see a way that they can maybe leverage it out. But that's not – I hate that way to do politics.
We need the team spirit.
Yeah, this is where Greg and I get along. We'll go in and we'll sit down and we'll talk about it and we'll say, what can we do on both sides of it? Now, you've got probably extremes who don't think there's a climate problem on that side, and then you've probably got people who say, you should ride bikes all the time. That's just wrong. That is wrong. That's not a way to set policy.
Here's the real issue is that we're going to have to stop shoehorning 75%+ of Utah's entire population into four counties of a valley.
Yes.
We're going to have to see all 29 counties have economic opportunities and people live there. And the cost of living, turns out, is a lot lower in some of these areas if there were jobs that people could have and raise families. This whole state has opportunity to see a good quality of life. And if we want air quality to improve here, there's a lot we can do with tier 3 fuel, things like that. But you got to get the rest of the state involved. Well, the rest of these counties have to be involved in the in having industry, and they're losing their kids. The irony for the rest of the state is that you have parents and grandparents watching their kids leave their communities to go live somewhere else, out of state or the Wasatch Front, because there's no opportunity for them where they've grown up. That has got to change in Utah. And that will,
I shipped my daughter out to California, and it's because we don't have an ocean. So let's fix that.
Well, then we need to just start burning more carbon, get that ocean to rise up so we can have some beachfront here, and Heidi's daughter comes back.
Heidi, Greg makes a really good point, and he speaks the talk. I mean, he walks the talk. The port is a great example of where Greg said, we got to expand this. We need to take it out of Salt Lake City. Yep. We need to go to other counties. And his point on that is exactly why we need to expand all opportunities. High tech. You know, I'm impressed in
car. I haven't heard a ton about the port lately. It was fun that you said that out loud. I was like, I forgot about the port.
Well, no, Greg led an initiative to say, we're taking it to other counties. And Carbon County is one example of that. And another example of Carbon County taking tech down there is they've got a pretty intense learning and a company down there that's doing a lot of high tech in Helper, actually.
And this
Helper,
is the hub and spoke plan.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Just you could, there's just because of the Intercontinental Railroad, Utah, beyond any other Western state, has rail connectivity to every coastal port from California up to Washington and all in between. So that is a unique opportunity for manufacturing, for all the things that create jobs.
Yeah.
So when we talk supply chain problems, we've got a lot of solutions in this whole state, not to Wasatch Front, but the whole state. And frankly, the communities outside the Wasatch Front need these opportunities.
And we have a golden spike. Don't forget that.
Yeah, yes. We've got that. And I don't want to brag right now, but the Hatch family is doing all we can to save the air. My son crashed one of our cars. We were a two-car family for a while.
Oh, my God.
And we didn't replace it. So he's been riding his bike to work, which is no fun in the snow because you get splattered with the snow, but been there, done that. And I ride tracks sometimes. We just, whoever needs the car most gets it. Because cars are expensive, and we're so cheap at my house. We're like, maybe they'll get less bad soon.
I can only imagine. The family recoil of crashing a car when I've seen just a slight little fender bender and the stress that cost
car.
It and to wreck it entirely. Oh my gosh,
I
they
know.
Must be
my beloved Acura. He
apocalyptic.
Yes. So
the GoFundMe account for Hatch family
for
the,
family
to
peace.
Save your son so he doesn't freeze to death.
There's a lot of
I think I'll put that up. Leslie, can you put that
I
up?
I know he sent me his Christmas car list and there was a car on it with an exclamation point. And I'm like, I don't think Santa.
How old is your son?
He's 18. So he's a senior in high school. I'm like, that's not going to happen, but we'll help you buy a car.
Yeah.
So anyhow.
Yeah.
Okay. You're good parents.
Yeah. All right. So we got to talk about the presidential election. It's kind of coming front and center. We're almost to 2024. RFK Jr. held a rally here yesterday in Salt Lake City. It looked like there's probably a couple hundred people there. He has to go to every state right now to make sure he can get the signatures to be on the ballot. That's half the battle for him right now. And when you look at the polls, he's actually looking like he could be a disruptor. You guys can tell me whether he is or not. Depending on the poll, pulling in 20% of the vote, if you look at where his money's coming from, I'm going to start with you, Greg. When I look at where his donors are coming from, there's a lot of people who haven't donated, but of people who had, there's more Republicans donating to him than Democrats. So what do you think the draw is for him, or is there no draw and he's just going to wreck it for everybody?
No, I got to tell you, and I would like for Scott, because I know he's very close with the Biden administration, and he probably has a take here that I'll need to hear. But my wife, Krista, who's a Republican, conservative, and really is a great sounding board for me, telling me what's going on, and I always get, she's always ahead of the curve. She really likes RFK Jr. She
what
really
does. What
does
she like about him?
She does believe that the voice of the everyday people has been silenced. She does believe that corporations on both sides in the Democrat and Republican Party are running these parties now. She worries about an Eisenhower military-industrial complex, that you're engaging in foreign wars because of profit.
Right.
RFK had an interview here in a local station where he said, Trump derangement syndrome has gotten so bad amongst Democrats where the Democrats used to be against foreign wars, they're now, because Trump was against it, they're now for it.
Yeah.
Where, you know, where he was, where Democrats were usually suspicious of these foreign trade agreements, and how that would take jobs or opportunities away from working Americans. where Trump was agreeing with that, they now embrace these foreign trade agreements. And he argues that the detriment of the everyday people. These are messages that I'm going to tell you that my wife and a lot of people
are
feeling like they aren't being heard, or that there's just so much corporate influence now, BlackRock or those control whether it's
Soros,
the war machine or
Koch brother. Yeah, I mean,
she at the point though where she'd actually vote? Because there's one thing with liking what you're hearing and actually going through with it. Because I think a lot of people get nervous with a third party vote. We saw it with Evan McMullen, where I think everyone thought he was going to win the state, and I think that in the end there were a lot of people who are like, oh, but
so
Republican
she
or Democrat.
Told me yesterday she would vote for him. She would do it. Listening to his local interview,
divulging all your secrets.
No, I actually think that's how I would say disruptor. You mentioned it. Yeah. That's the kind of disruptor an RFK Jr. is, because to convince a Utah in red state Utah to even consider a candidate, there's got to be something going on.
He's a Democrat and was till 4 weeks ago.
Yes, and I mean his issues, his position on gun control or climate. He frames it in a way that doesn't create the recoil that you see between parties, but then people worry, does he still want the same thing? Is he still trying to shut everything down, but calling it something different? So there's a lot of questions, open-ended questions, but I'm telling you, his momentum is, I think, everyday people are feeling left behind by the two major parties, and that is one of the appeals that I think that he has. And I'll tell you, I think the Democrats are crazy to have not allowed him into at least a primary process.
We have a Democrat here. We can ask.
So now I'm going to turn it over to the guy that knows his own party.
Should Democrats have let him debate, or had President Biden debate him and actually had a primary, or does that just go away from what we've always done? The president is obviously going to be your nominee. We move on with that.
Well, there's so many aspects of this that I could touch on. I think the first one is that RFK went over to the Other Side Academy yesterday and spent about an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Interesting. I saw that.
Yeah, okay. He spent about an hour and 20 minutes with him. And I've learned a lot about him as an individual. When his father, his uncle was assassinated, then his father was assassinated, mm-hmm. From 14 to about 23, he was a pretty hard drug user.
Yeah.
Really hard drug user.
Yeah. He's been open about that.
And he has been. And I think that's why our friend Dave DeRocher, and he had such great conversations yesterday over at the Other Side Academy, because Dave has had a similar experience. Mm-hmm. Tony Fauci was out here. Dr. Anthony Fauci was out here a couple of weeks ago, and I got to go meet and listen to
that
him.
That would have been terrifying.
Were
you
so scared?
Were you so scared?
Just until I got my other shot, so that was okay. he spoke with the Wasatch Speaker Series, and he was fascinating. Fascinating. And one of the questions was, tell us about the RFK and where he's going on this thing about
you're talking about vaccines, okay.
Yeah, vaccines and that. And so RFK went to Fauci and said, look, I know you've been the greatest fans of our family. We're all friends. And will you come and listen to my presentation? And you can't ask any questions for the first 30 minutes. You just have to listen. And so
Fauci said this, or RFK said this?
RFK said that to Fauci.
Yeah.
And the conditions that he do this. So Fauci said to us, look, I went in, and on his third slide, I said, RFK, I need to challenge you on this. And he said, no. You told me that you wouldn't ask any questions. He said, but everything you've said to me and showed me is not scientific. There's nothing in there. And in fact, the stories that you're using are just that. They're stories. And I'll know about this doctor in England who said that if you take the mumps shot or the shots like that, it causes...
Are you talking about autism?
Autism and all that. And, that guy was disproven. He was taken out, and they never, ever, ever had scientific... So Fauci's point was that he is a guy who believes this, but he's just wrong if you take it from a scientific point of view.
It's interesting to be able to have conversations, though. I don't know if either of you have ever listened to RFK when he tells his story about how he even got into vaccines.
Yes.
Because I think, you know, I don't think anyone's 100% right on anything, whether you listen to Fauci or RFK.
Right.
But it's interesting because it sounds like it wasn't something he was ever interested in. It was, he was an environmental lawyer, and he was doing stuff for cleaning up rivers and trying to make sure they were healthy. And people would start, because there was heavy metals and whatnot in the waters, and moms would start showing up to his meetings that were concerned about vaccines, and he's like, this has nothing to do with what I'm doing. And eventually he was listening to people who had issues and trying to figure out what
was
wrong.
That's exactly right.
And I think whether you believe what RFK says or Fauci or there's something in between, I think it's interesting to have a conversation.
Oh, everything is interesting to have a conversation and be respectful of each other.
Because that's how we learn and get better, right?
There was a saying, I heard the saying that in the vacuum of information, politics will fill this void.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful about that.
Yeah.
The one phrase that I don't like, that whether it's Fauci or anyone, I don't like science framed as a final landing spot. If anyone knows the scientific method, there's never a time when you know scientifically anything.
You're learning.
We are the scientific process. There's always, you're always staring at those things. The question, are all emeralds green? Well, every emerald we've ever found is green, but does that mean that they're all on planet Earth green? We don't know. So my point is, when we talk about science, it is always challenging. It is always challenging the premise or looking at you know, what we have by way of vaccines, are there side effects, are those things, and if we're going to get there and say, well, science says it, it's all fine, we're all, don't ask any questions, we're done here, that's where I think people, where it starts getting political. If you can't have some good information that you can chew on or debate on.
Yeah. No, all or nothing doesn't work on either side of it.
You've got to have the debate, and you got to have the competing information or something like that, I'd say.
But I think that there are facts that are facts that we know, and that we know that if we take a flu shot, we probably are not going to get the flu as bad as what we if we hadn't.
Well, but that's even last year's flu, right? That's last year's flu strain.
I think it probably depends on, because sometimes
My flu shots, that whole thing's not bulletproof, I got to tell you right now. But I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and I think
do you see that as like his main pitch?
I do.
When you look at RFK, you think vaccines like a one-issue kind of thing.
And I think that's where he's going to have a challenge. Now, you ask about, is he going to be a disruptor in the political process? I don't think so. I think he'll have some airtime and it'll move forward. But you said something else that you probably didn't even realize you said this, the presumed candidates. There is so much time in the world of politics when you have a year left to decide who the candidate will be. Watch for Nikki Haley. Watch for Gavin Newsom. There could be things that change overnight.
Yeah.
Overnight. I mean, our president, whom I'm friends with, he's 80 years old.
Oh, name dropping. Look at you.
Well, I have to say that once in a while. I actually have a photo of us when I first met him. We look like two little kids, actually, in this.
Really?
Because he came out here. Yeah, he came out and did a fundraiser for us.
So here's something interesting to ask you then, because you know him as a person. You've known him for a long time. When you look at him right now, is he the same strong person that you want your president to be that you've known over the years? Or is he at the point where you'd like to say as a friend, hey, you've done a great job, you've worked hard, but it's maybe time to hang up the Oval Office, jacket or whatever?
That's a great question. And the answer to that is a little bit of both. When he came out, we were with him for an hour and a half up at a place in Park City that I don't know who has houses like that, but not Greg.
You're being modest to all your swanky friends.
So when was this that we're talking Democrats. About time-wise?
He came out 2 months ago.
Oh, 2 months ago,
and it was for
okay.
the VA announcement.
Oh, yes.
And so he came out, and then we were with him. He is as sharp as a tack. There is nothing there. My wife, the wonderful, staunch Republican, said, you know what, he didn't skip a beat. And we've met him before.
I did not realize your wife was a Republican. It'd be fun to get you two in here together.
Oh, yeah.
Podcast. That'd be good, huh?
Yeah. Linda's the best. She is the best. But anyway, we watched him. The only thing he did do was lean up against the post a couple of times. But he stood in front of us that long. Every question that was asked, and this is more intimate because the press was, well, some of the press was there. AP was there. And he was sharp as a tack. Now, you said, would I say to him, it's time to hang it up? He starts his meetings like at 9 and 10 in the morning. George Bush, Bill Clinton, all of them started at 7, they were up and running. and in a president, you want someone who's continuous to be curious and have creativity to solve the problems of the world. Mm-hmm. Creativity and being curious solves those problems. But he's 80 years old. And I look at our own church leader here in the state of Utah. He's 99.
Yeah.
And the physical side of it shows that it's there. The mental state, I would say that both leaders are really, really good. But it would be nice to have someone else a little bit younger. It would be. And I think when you look at the opposition, you look at President Trump, he's no spring chicken. And it's very much the same thing. It's too bad that both parties couldn't find candidates that would be a JFK or a George Bush or whomever you want to say on that side of it.
Well, this is my theory. Scott, I haven't discussed this with you, but I've said this before. I am actually 100% convinced that whether it's March or before the caucuses in Iowa begin, President Biden will announce that he's not going to seek another term. I think
you really believe that.
100%, and I believe that they are aware of it. I think what they would like to avoid is a messy Democrat primary. So I think that when you see Gavin Newsom going through multiple states, when you see him traveling to China. When you see him doing a national debate with Ron DeSantis,
the great blue and red state debate last night. Yeah.
This man, I am telling you that they envision in March of 24 or somewhere in the end of the next year, a Kamala Harris and a Gavin Newsom primary. I think Gavin Newsom's going to say, look, I appointed a black female senator. I'm all in on this. She can't be outpace me on that.
You don't think Democrats would be enraged by the fact that they would overlook a female black vice president and get the white guy?
I think they'll compete. I think she'll try. But I think that White House, it's just my belief that that he wouldn't have as prominent of a role. And he's very adamant about, I will never run against this man. I'm not worthy to run against this man. And he'll never run against that man. That man is going to go. Yeah. That man is going to say, you know, I'm tapping out.
Did you watch the debate last night?
No, the DeSantis. No, I missed it.
It was interesting. I watched a lot of it. And the one thing he said at the end, I think he meant it as kind of like a burn on DeSantis. Yeah. But it was interesting because you're like, you both want this job and are expecting that something will happen. But he said, the one thing I can tell you for sure is that neither one of us is going to be the nominee. And I'm like, oh, but you guys are both hoping.
He wants to be caught so flat-footed. He wants to be like, really? You want me? Oh, gosh, really? I want Biden. Really,
And Greg, you'll really appreciate this. Guess what his press conference was yesterday? He is changing homelessness. Enough is enough.
Oh,
and Politico had this, and he had a big press conference. It's just everything it's an Operation Rio Grande that they're performing in California. Yeah. And so that goes to your point.
Yes.
People are saying, wait, why would we elect you as president when you allow this stuff to happen that happens right here in Salt Lake City?
That's right.
Feces and all the things that are we're going
DeSantis
on.
DeSantis did do an effective job with the poop map. I'm sure you've probably seen that.
And Heidi and Scott, I'll tell you that it was amazing to watch. I read the LA Times review of the debate because I thought DeSantis beat him like a rented mule. I was actually shocked because I look at Gavin Newsom as very telegenic, very photogenic, I thought he was going to do.
He's a good orator.
I'm really worried about him being the candidate instead of Biden. But he performed horribly. And one of the things that I thought was odd is that the LA Times, when they were doing their they couldn't even say he won. So what they said is it's very unfair that Sean Hannity, who's a biased moderator, like the first time anyone's ever mentioned in the regime media of a biased moderator, but he's a biased moderator. And so he went after issues that are just really specific to California, like homelessness, violent crime, and immigration. It's like, well, actually, welcome to America.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that those are California issues. I saw in that debate vulnerabilities of Gavin Newsom that I didn't think he'd have because he's so slick and he's so good at talking around some of these
great
bad issues.
Right? It's hard to look away from the good hair.
See, this is what I'm talking about. This is it. This is what's going to happen. Hair is going to rule the day.
DeSantis did, though, I think a far better job on the stage when he could talk about himself as a governor. He's been, in my mind, when you look, a better governor than a candidate for president. And I think he was a governor last night and somehow did a better job as a governor and not...
than as the presidential. I agree with
you. Yeah, I don't know why... I guess it's sort of like when you look at Tim Tebow, who was, you know, playing for the Florida Gators, and he was the best thing that had happened to him, and somehow didn't translate to being able to play with the big boys nationally. I don't know how that works. I'm not a football fan. I don't understand that. I'm not going to pretend to.
But I respect the analogy.
But sometimes,
I
like that. But sometimes it doesn't translate, and you don't know why it doesn't translate.
I actually think that he is in such a crowded field in that Republican primary debate. Everybody's looking for the one-liner. They're looking for some headline, and there's just no time to. If you put DeSantis one-on-one with a Republican candidate for president or against a Democrat like Gavin Newsom, I think you're going to get more of a Governor DeSantis than you get the candidate who's who's on a crowded stage.
Right.
Everyone's trying to come up with their little, and it's
well, you know
so
that
contrived.
For running for governor.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
had like nine people up there when, and it was hard to get any
to
space
talk issues,
and
yeah.
to talk issues, and you really were looking for the soundbite that the press would pick up, and then people would.
Yeah, it's hard in a crowded field, and so I think that you got to see what we all thought we would see in a candidate for president in DeSantis last night. But he's just right now, the Republican primary is just so crowded. And it's actually, I find the debates farcical. I don't find them to be substantive. I don't think they help the Republicans at all, the debates they've been having.
We have a debate coming up next week, I think, another primary debate. I don't know how many candidates will be in it, but I think Megyn Kelly is doing that one. So we'll be watching and see who's involved and who gets to talk. But like you said, we're a year out, and I feel like we probably should know who they are. But I also think that Hillary Clinton thought Obama would be president either. And how close was that, like, when everything started to shift, you know?
Perfect analogy, Heidi.
Yeah. Yep. And the Koch brothers, I guess it's a Koch brother. At this point, their money seems to be
singular.
Going behind Nikki Haley, and sometimes money matters.
That's a big deal. I mean, that's a really big deal when that infusion of cash right now where she is. And, she's been saying some really good things.
What do you like that you hear from her?
I think I like her whole foreign policy. I think she's got a really good handle on that. And I liked it when she took on Ramaswamy.
Vivek Ramaswamy.
Yeah, I thought it was great when she took him on, and it showed her character. You know, don't screw with my family. You know, let's have a debate up here about us, but don't do that. And I think she's just got good common sense. Now, my Democrat friends that live in South Carolina, is that where she's
from? South
Carolina.
Yeah, South.
They paint a different picture of her. And they said, oh, no, she's almost a Ron DeSantis. But I haven't seen that on that. I think Gavin did a good job when he pointed out to DeSantis, when you talk about freedom, your party's supposed to be this, not the nanny state, but you're banning books, you're doing this, your reproductive rights, all those things. I think that kind of got some of my Republican friends say, they are kind of looking like the nanny state.
Reproductive rights, I think, are going to be a big one coming up in this next election. So it'll be
Why do you think that? I want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Would you vote for someone who bans abortion completely?
I don't think I can answer that question ethically because of how I have to report. So I can't I can't answer that. But I do think it is
an issue. Very good. Yeah. Very impressive.
But I was looking at it more from a woman's perspective.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where Republicans probably are going to have a problem because, you know, you need women to vote for you.
Right.
And I think women vote very differently and think of it differently. But I do think that women, Republican and Democrat, you know, are more open to having this discussion than they were in the past. And I think the interesting thing is that this always comes down to the same thing of when we talk about my body, my choice, we hear a lot about that. And I think it really still comes down to whether in the abortion issue, if you think it's your body, your choice, or if it's your body plus another body, which it's going to be hard to change that mind on someone else, you know, and not your choice, where there's two bodies involved. So I watch this just as closely as you guys. I'm certainly not going to tell you where I stand on that one, but I do think that Republicans are going to have to figure out a way to talk to women where they can keep their votes, because I don't think that they can talk the same way they have for years.
I would agree. I think there's a quick way to say it that causes an immediate recoil with women. And my wife has walked me through why.
You don't like to be told what to do?
Well, there's a lot into it that you don't want. You already feel like, you know, there's just a lot you're dealing with as a woman in this world, and so you don't want a statement that says I'm going to ban it outright and you're going to do whatever us the guys tell you to do. What I think is the more substantive discussion is, if we look around the world and we look at how many weeks a pregnancy is, you can have a pregnancy and still have it terminated before you have an abortion. the United States and you know, before the Supreme Court case, and in now some states where they've made it the case, it's like China and North Korea and America in terms of how late in a pregnancy you can still terminate that pregnancy. And when you take it into the context like that, and you look at the modern world and where we're considering the life of the child, and I don't know if you have the time. I don't know if the spin lines will ever afford that kind of discussion. But that's where the real conversation has to land. And I do like that states have to make these decisions as per their state legislatures and their constituencies and where those priorities are. I think that's the right way to do it. And I'm not someone who thinks that it should be banned outright. I'm not someone who – I think there are cases of rape and incest in life of the mother. But I also say that that there's a guy involved too. And you know what, as well as being responsible in terms of the finances, but also the choice, if it's been a choice and not a crime, that you have people that have made some choices and some consequences have been born from that, there are two adults that have to go sort that out in an appropriate way, in a responsible way. And it shouldn't be foisted on one and not the other. So all that stuff. I mean, I think that's the discussion, but I think that the way it can be framed very quickly, It will cause problems for Republican candidates.
Does it need to be, though, a federal debate at this point, though? Because the Supreme Court sent it to the states, or is it should be something that really just our legislative leaders and we're talking about on the home front?
Well, that's the way the Supreme Court has ruled, so it's done law.
I think that's the best way. We do it for other health care delivery. I
mean, we do it for almost anything.
Everything. States decide how insurance covers what and who and how. We worked on autism this way.
I will tell you one thing. That this is where my faith really plays a big part in this. So I'm the Democrat. I'm going to the pro-choice people. They want to interview me. I'm going to the pro-life people. And my stance has always been this. In the case of rape, incest, health and life of the mother, and extreme fetal deformities, after careful consulting with ecclesiastical leaders and your spouse, as Greg pointed out, that decision should be up to them, no matter how many weeks out, where they are, if those fit that criteria. And, you know, it was really interesting. The pro-choice people said to me, do you really believe that? And I said, yes. And they said, well, that's a lot of choice. The pro-life people said to me, wow, do you really believe that? And I said, yes, I do. And I really didn't want either one of their endorsements. But I found that interesting when we sat down and had a collaborative conversation.
Correct. Yep.
And I think the LDS faith has got this one right. Yeah. I think what they've said is exactly. And remember, there are leaders in that faith that have been trained medical people. And I think they understand it from that point of view as well as from a spiritual perspective.
Democrats used to Democrats used to talk like that. If I look back to, I would say even President Clinton the time and other, it was rare, you know, and that's how they used to talk about abortion, and it's vastly changed. So do you feel like Democrats have gone too far in wanting to say whenever, for whatever reason, for, you know, to whenever you want?
I do, and I think it's they've gone into this mode of saying, oh, wait, the Supreme Court ruled that they've overturned Roe v. Wade, so now they're going to take it to the farther extreme instead of letting Roe v. Wade be the standard barrier. So I think they have galvanized, and they're putting on their best armor to go out and be defensive as opposed to offensive in this whole thing.
And are Republicans on the other side so extreme too to say nothing? Because that's the problem, is I feel like it's all or nothing on everything.
I think
these
you'll
days.
Pay a price at the ballot box. I think if you are too extreme, I think that there's going to be a consequence on both sides of that. So for me, my political journey, I was a public servant. We're dealing with all these issues on the state level.
Right.
And I got to be honest with you, as much as Roe v. Wade had been talked about in pro-life circles or even in conservative circles, I kind of thought it was a decided law. I didn't think we were going to revisit it. I really
Greg
didn't.
I
was just kind of like, said that our whole
I was like, huh, you no, know, okay. The moment, though, that I re-engaged in this issue is when I heard the governor from Virginia, Northrop. He is a physician.
Right.
He was talking about partial birth abortion. And he was talking about the delivery of a full-term child with all but its head.
Yeah.
And then terminating that pregnancy. And I was sick at the description of it. And I thought to myself, I don't think people are stopping here. I don't what does the word abortion mean? If you go to that extreme, and all of a sudden I felt like, you know, I've been maybe asleep at the wheel here, because I had in my head it was these early weeks that you're trying to make some hard decisions.
Days.
Are you telling me we're going to have a full term birth except for the head and then terminate a pregnancy? That's infanticide in my life, or in my mind. And so I re-engaged in the pro-life discussion because I did not see this temperance or this. It just seemed like it was just going further and further and further. And I think it was to your question, Heidi, when you hear it used to be, it is something nobody wants. So nobody ever wants to have this face this horrific choice. And that used to be the premise from which you would then say,
right,
how do we go forward?
Right.
I hear more now. You want to be able to abort. You do not want to have that child. You want to be able to go as late as possible. You want. It's almost a badge of honor. And that is, and at least that's how it's coming across.
That's the extreme that Heidi just articulated so
well.
And
I think that will suffer the ballot box too.
And the caveat on this whole thing is, that's in fantasy. I agree with you 110%. But maybe there are cases where something is a medical reason.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be able to take it away. But I'll tell you the caveat on this is Ohio and what happened there. That was amazing how they voted that to be taken out of the Constitution and restore all those rights, and they put it in their Constitution.
Yeah.
That last session was...
Yeah, and the challenge there is that the language, when you put a law like that to the voters, there's a lot of fine print in there, too, and I think it's gone a lot further than even what the law before...
Well, that's just what you were talking about.
Yeah.
And that's... The emotions go that way, carry it both to the side, and that should... Yeah. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I know. We could talk about this for hours. I didn't even plan on talking about abortion today, and here we are.
But I think it's important because I think women, once they get behind that ballot box, and people have said to me, they'll just do that. I don't think that's right. Their husbands might have been telling them a lot of things on how to vote, but when that comes to that issue, I think women go, I'm going
to vote. That's why I think it has to be wisely framed.
It
has to be wisely framed.
And I think maybe that's where Nikki Haley has made up some ground. Because in the debates, one of the debates, she talked about it. And she was like, you know, I believe one way, but when you look realistically, I think, at what can be accomplished and what votes you have and what's going to happen. I mean,
64 votes that they need in the Senate.
It's not realistic.
I hate to throw some cold water on Nikki Haley, but here's my deal about her. And it's not the abortion issue. It's that... when she was no longer governor and she was done being the UN ambassador, she takes it. She's on the board of a defense contractor company. She's inviting Disney when DeSantis is going after Disney for them getting involved in the Don't Say Gay. It doesn't say that, but getting involved in that legislation where they should be able to teach kids sexual topics before the third grade. And she's like, hey, Disney, come on over to South Carolina. We'd love to have you. I tell you right now, there's a lot of people that think in the Republican side that Nikki Haley is bought and paid for by Koch brother and the defense whoever contractors and everybody.
Check.
It's like, again, corporate America is, I think RFK said in an interview yesterday that I had never thought of before, is that the Citizens United decision that allowed for these super PACs.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
When as a Republican, I was always like, well, that's fine. You know, these are companies. We have a corporate influence on politics now that is hidden and I think
it's
it
scary.
Is superseding the both everyday
sides.
Voter on both
100%
sides. Both sides. And I'm telling you that corporate money that nobody can trace and nobody can see, it is driving political decisions and
money
narratives.
Money ruins everything.
I agree 100%.
That I'm telling you, and I think when I look at Nikki Haley, she falls into that category of the corporate influence.
So we've learned something today. See, that's why these discussions are important, because he's got inside information I didn't know. I've got some. And you know who was absolutely adamant, who said that very legislation will ruin us, was Bob Bennett. Citizens United.
Interesting.
Bob Bennett preached that in my ear for a whole year. He said, Scott, you wait and see the ramifications of what's going to happen on this.
Well, I do. I think there is a corporate drive on
both sides
of the parties now.
I agree.
I do. I think if you look at the things that make, you look at pharmaceuticals, you look at war. You look at media.
Any of it.
All the things that make it, that are huge profit. Sources,
they're
all the rage.
And the problem is there's plenty of people who work for our government agencies who then leave and go work for Big Pharma
100%.
Or work for these war machines and stuff too. And so, it's also intermingled. I wish there was a way that you could wave a magic wand and undo all of that, the money and the influence. I don't know how you do that. I guess I'd be rich if I could figure that out.
One tiny caveat
and then
about
I would
Disney.
The world.
About Disney. Elon Musk told their CEO yesterday where to go. And did you guys see that?
I don't know if I saw that, but I saw him on some live thing 2 days ago where he was. Was that the live thing where about the pulling the funding off of Twitter and he told them to go F themselves?
That is 100%. And then he said, and especially for Disney, and he said, Bob, if you're in the audience, that's for you. And
I missed that part.
Bob was in the audience. Ooh. Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney.
Take your money and stick
the
it.
The thing that Elon Musk said that if anyone heard it, it's haunting, is that I see a lot of corporations talking about good things and doing evil things or bad things. And I think that's true. I think that the Wall Street Journal did some Instagram accounts and they did a test and they hit on these reels or whatever that likes on young kids. And the way the algorithms fed, and this is a Wall Street Journal article, the sexually explicit ads or videos, and then videos of young children. And so their story was about how these social media platforms, you got to be really careful, because if you start hitting like on some of these things, what's being driven to you are things you weren't even looking for, but they're going into whatever you hit like on. And I will tell you that is where, you know, you can try to ban advertisers of X because you think that he wasn't strong enough on Israel's side. Right. But if that Wall Street Journal article is true, and when you sign up for Instagram or some of these accounts, you hit like on a couple things, you start getting flooded with these perverse images.
Exactly what,
that's a problem.
That's
exactly a real
what
problem.
Spencer Cox has been talking about.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. His issue on that.
And I think Utah Supreme Court actually ruled on one of those cases today that I think TikTok specifically has to start giving up information, because I think they appealed to the Utah Supreme Court. I don't know the case exactly, but they didn't want to give up some of their disclosures and evidence and what they do behind the scenes. But the Supreme Court here said, sorry.
You can't strain at gnats and swallow camels. If you want to be canceled, if you want to say there's things wrong, God bless you. It's a free country, free speech. But you can't say that at the same time you're seeing some of the stuff that's getting pushed out there
and
the way
it's
being pushed
addictive.
Out there.
It's, you know, I had an account for some time on TikTok, and this was, I don't know, 2 years ago.
You're way cooler than I haven't even signed up for TikTok yet.
No, but what I found myself is exactly what Greg said. You know, I can remember one day I was home, and I wasn't feeling good, and I kept looking at these, and they knew, that algorithm knew me.
They knew what to feed you?
Exactly what to feed me. Exactly, 110%. And it's just a fact of life. I eliminate it. I've never been back on since.
So I like gorillas.
And that's what
you
get
see
fed?
My Facebook reels? Yeah. Gorillas.
There you go.
It is funny. I posted a couple of raccoon videos when they were getting stuck in storm drains like a year ago here when there was major flooding. I get so much raccoon content now. It's wholesome and cute, but I get a lot of raccoon content. So it is interesting how that works. And Elon Musk, I know, is a listener of this podcast. So give me a call.
Come on, Elon. Get on the air.
I would like to pick that billionaire's brain, because he has a lot of money. He has some interesting ideas about everything. But he's kind of one of the rogue billionaires.
Oh,
I do. I love it. I'm grateful he's out there. I think that's, he again is contributing to a discussion and debate that if you control all the conduits of communication, you never really hear. He's actually allowing some discussion to happen.
Very important. Yep.
Yeah, it is. Hey, before we lose everybody with the podcast here, we have to talk really quickly about our local election. Celeste Malloy, last Tuesday, won and then was sworn in exactly a week later, which is so fast. I don't know how you'd get everything together to do that, but she was sworn in on Tuesday. She made a floor speech, which I thought was nice. She talked about her FFA roots, quoted their creed, talked about the Constitution, seemed like she was ready to go for it. Did either of you listen or watch that swearing in?
Well, coming from Castledale, Utah, I know what FFA really
means.
Yeah,
you do.
Greg probably doesn't, but Farmers of America.
His hands have never been that dirty.
You get a nice jacket, you get a nice emblem, all of that. No, I thought she did a good job. I thought it was really articulate.
Celeste, look, I ran against her, and she won that special election, and I think she won it largely on the weight of having been working on lands issues in rural Utah, and she knows these issues. She's an attorney. She's gone up against the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance or some of these environmental groups that it's made it very hard for these rural counties to do what they do. Grazing rights are under threat, and generations of grazing rights are under threat. So to have someone like Celeste Malloy, who intimately understands these real-time issues in such small populations, where in the United States with so many, 300-plus million people, who's going to understand the issues in Kane County or in some of these small counties? Right. So I think her greatest weight and her greatest influence will be to in, to educate, to get people to understand how draconian these federal laws or federal management of lands can impact rural communities, and let the state of Utah have some control. Let them make some smart decisions with water infrastructure and even getting but utilities
Greg,
would, across
wouldn't
that.
Wouldn't have you done that if you were...
Yeah, I would have, yeah.
Well, let me just say one thing about that. I don't know Celeste. I participated in the last debate and watched her. But I thought Greg Hughes would be one of the best congressmen that we've had in our state.
Thank you, Scott.
And I know one thing that he would have done immediately. He would have gone to HUD and asked for a waiver on this homelessness where we spend hundreds of millions of dollars and we don't get results. And I think his background would have really shown been better for us. And I'm not disparaging against Celeste. I'm not. But what I'm saying is you had a more robust background to understand from development, home building, to all these different things that you had an expertise.
Greg, you're blushing, but now you've been endorsed by a Democrat. You're
I know,
screwed
it's my
the
street
next time you
over,
be a
right?
Republican.
No,
I endorsed literally, him before.
Yeah, no. But honestly, the reason I can say what I hope to see and what I think we'll see from a Celeste Malloy is because these are the critical issues in Utah right now. And in that district, there's 11 counties in that congressional district, 11 counties. And they aren't, it was on purpose not to be a Wasatch Front district. And so those are issues that when I was a public servant, I served in the House when I was Speaker of the House. Yeah. I've worked on these issues very closely. And so I'm aware, and I know that she's aware. Those are the critical issues that she has to bring perspective, information that drives good decisions, and really some empathy. Get them out here. Get them out to Utah. Have some of these members of Congress who live in areas where they've never even known what it's like to have federal land.
See a canyon and
see what this is like, and to see how you navigate this. It's more difficult than people realize.
I'll tell you one thing. Bless her heart. the day she gets sworn in, she has a candidate file against her. I'll tell you what. There's no rest for that woman, and she has to run again.
This is the first year that January is the filing deadline. It's in the month of January.
January 2nd to the 9th.
Yeah, so we basically have a month, so it'll be interesting. I'm also going to be watching what Kathleen Reby did. I think she ran a great race, and she's looking at possibly running for Senate, possibly running for that same congressional seat again, or going back to the legislature. So it'll be interesting to see. I did think she'd finish a little higher, though. I have the final numbers here at 57% for Celeste Malloy and Kathleen Reby at 33%, close to 34%. There was almost 10% of the vote that went to all of those other third-party candidates, and there were a lot. But I kind of thought they'd be pulling more from Celeste Malloy's numbers than Reby's, so I was kind of thinking she would finish higher. Any insight there?
I think it's the way the district's drawn, frankly. You have a portion of Salt Lake County, a portion of Davis County. You don't have any Utah County.
Right.
And so it's not a Wasatch Front district. So if you enjoy, and St. George, we don't call it rural. It's actually a second-class size county. It's a large county. Yeah. But when you have Washington County and Iron County down there as anchors, and they're not inclined to vote a Democrat, that's a big anchor for that district. And so I think she's probably done where you would see those, because if you look at her Salt Lake County numbers, she crushed Celeste Malloy
in
terms of the numbers.
That's just what I was going to say about that. When she came out early, everybody thought, oh, she's going to win. She's going to win. You forgot the other 10 counties.
And the interesting thing is that obviously if you're in Salt Lake City and you're a Democrat, you know, the numbers are stacked against you. Right. Is it an R plus 11 district? But voter turnout so low, I wonder if, you know, Salt Lake City Democrats really were fired up and turned out to vote if they could, you know, change things, because voter turnout was low.
It was very low. That's disappointing for both parties.
Yeah. And we had a mayoral election that could have drawn a big crowd, too.
Yeah. What was it? 25% of voters participated?
Yeah, it was garbage.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was disappointing.
To think about the 25% of district, how many voters are there in the state? I mean, in the city, maybe 100,000. There's a big number there, and it's appalling.
Yeah.
Was it Thanksgiving? Everybody left early?
I know, but you've got your ballot on your countertop for 3 weeks. I know that's an excuse
Good
we talk about,
Heidi.
And it's normal times, but I feel like you have a long time to think about it and to do it. It's not like the olden days where if you were out of town that week that you just couldn't
Why
vote.
Why did people vote?
I don't know. Were they just not excited about the candidates?
Rocky and Aaron, there was a major difference between those two candidates.
Yeah,
I went to some of their debates, and bless Rocky's heart, you can only beat up on somebody for so long before people will say, you know what, that's too much.
And they want you to stand for instead of just against things.
Tell us what your plan is. Yeah. Tell us what you're doing. What you'd do different than Mayor Hatch. What would you do different? Don't keep picking on him.
But Valentine, he got 7% of the vote. I didn't see that coming. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I swear to you, Mayor Mendenhall got 25,800 votes, okay? There's a collective 18,300 people that voted against her. I would tell you that those 18,000 people live in Salt Lake City, where the homeless have overrun their homes, their businesses, their 100%. Property. 100%. That's where the 18,000 that didn't vote for her live. And everyone that's is fortunate enough to be away from that and not feeling that crime and not feeling that violence and the burning down of homes around ballpark and everything else, they voted for Aaron Mendenhall.
They did.
So that's how I honestly think that's how that broke down.
Do you think Governor Cox coming out and endorsing her?
That's what I was wondering. Is that made any difference if Cox and Herbert both backing her?
Is it
just because they felt like she's nicer to work with and they just didn't want to have to deal with Rocky?
I would have to understand Salt Lake City to be a little bit more moderate, to maybe even right leaning, for that to have mattered. Because I don't see Salt Lake City voters that way. So I don't. I actually thought it was a misstep to even ask for the governor and former governor to endorse you, because in Salt Lake City, that doesn't seem to be the key.
Well, if you look at the schematics on this, Aaron Mendenhall announces that they're going to enforce no camping and they're going to move people out in 300 seconds. She said, we'll give you 5 minutes and then you have to pack up and leave. And that day she had that press conference, it was the very next day that Governor Cox endorsed her. Now, Who's behind the scenes that is playing?
Who's pulling your strings, guys?
Well, it's just
thank you, Heidi.
You know, deathbed repentance. You have a bit of a jaundiced eye about what you're going to do about homelessness
in
the heart
of your
reelection campaign. You just saw the light. You're going to get, you have 500 seconds, whatever you just said. Come on. What have you been doing for the last 4 years? Give me a break.
The only time that place was cleaned up was Operation Rio Grande. We took out three cartels. We got people back on their feet. We had resource centers that worked.
Can we get back to that? Do you think Mayor Mendenhall in her second term will be ready and willing to tackle the problem?
I think if she's not, Mike Schultz and Stuart Adams are going to give some direction, and same with Governor Cox. I think
I don't know why I laughed inside my head when you said that, but Mike Schultz, I imagine him like in his cowboy boots and his Wranglers with a whip. So hopefully he sits down and talks.
Those are reins to a horse, unlike New York Times thought it was a whip. Okay, Heidi?
That is reins to a horse. Okay.
I will just tell you that the politics as I see it, now I don't live in Salt Lake City, so I didn't get any of the direct mail. I didn't see the campaigns front and center, but so it was a bit quiet from my perspective. But I don't think that Salt Lake City's council or its mayor wants to do anything that's going to make people angry. And in this space of homelessness and the crime and the cartels, there's nothing you can do that's going to make things better that's not going to make somebody angry. The status quo, to disrupt it, it's not easy. It comes with its own inherent pushback. And it requires you to spend political capital. And I can't spot a single person on that council or this mayor that wants to spend capital on that topic. So they'll just convene and talk.
But Greg, that's the exact point that Heidi's asking. Will the legislature intervene? Because when you intervened,
I had control
of the community and people appreciated it. The far, far left, we just got to give them a house. No, we're not going to give them a house. We're not going to do that. So that's why I think, Heidi, your question is so relevant. Will she understand, and it's probably the power of the purse string that says, we're going to cut your sales tax. We're going to take that away from you. And guess what?
We've got 10 years before the world shows up, so we can either like figure it out right now,
we can
pull off a San Francisco.
Or do it like Beijing does and just shut everything down so no one's driving or operating a factory for the months
you can't
there.
Leave.
Yeah.
I have a funny story about that, and then we got to be done with this podcast. So my brother-in-law works for the Olympics, I guess more for NBC, and so he travels around to each of the Olympics and works with the camera crews. And when he went to the Chinese Olympics in China, they all, this was in the middle of the pandemic,
right,
you know.
Right.
And so they had all traveled on an airplane together, and then they all had to take buses together, and they were getting tested like crazy.
Yeah.
But where the cameras were, when people were like showing up to the hotels, after they'd all been on a plane together, on a bunch of buses going from place to place together, they put them each in individual cars by themselves with their masks and everything, just for part of the show. And they were like, we were all just together. And so anyhow, they put on a good show. So
Kabuki theater.
Well, yes. Let's just hope that we do fix homelessness. I will tell you one thing. I've never seen such a resurgent of leaders coming together. You probably maybe or didn't know about this, but Governor Cox called a meeting right before the election at the mansion, where he brought in, you know, all the influencers in the city, and they had a heart to heart with the mayor about what was going on. And it now I see more than ever people who have vested interest here are coming out and saying enough's enough, because it has gotten out of control.
It is. Yeah. It is a constant onslaught right now of
it
people
is.
That are dealing with this.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, people always say, oh, their mental health, if we just had more mental health beds. Oh, it's their addiction. Those things probably play in that, but I have never, ever seen such a shelter-resistant group of people in my life. I used to be able to come down, pick them up, take them to the shelter, mm-hmm. walk them in. Now what they say to me is, it's my constitutional right to be right here. It is my constitutional right to urinate and defecate on the street.
Yep.
And you can't do anything about it. And I'm telling you right now, that mentality has been promoted by some ultra right, I mean left people that want to turn our capital city into a socialist protege of what happened in other countries. And we cannot let it happen.
We've had so much fun hanging out that we've reached an hour. But before I let you go, I know I have to ask you super quickly on this. I'm going to get you on set in just a second for the 4 o'clock news before we get done doing this. George Santos was expelled from the Congress today in the U.S. House. Are we surprised by this? Did they do the right thing? All four of our Utah legislators, I guess they're not Utah legislators, Utah congressional leaders, voted to oust him. I was a little surprised that they ended up doing it, not because it was right or wrong, but there's the big question of, once you do this, are you taking power away from the voters, where it's their decision who is going to represent them? Scott, what do you think real
Good
quick
question.
On this?
Good question. I think that indictment and the testimony that the committee had must be so compelling that they went ahead and did this for the sake of the institution. I completely agree with you. It's the people's house, and the people should make those decisions. But whatever was in that report, I think, was very compelling. And you said something that's really critical. Are they setting a precedence? And could the next one be, well, because I don't like your politics, we're going to expose you?
Yeah.
So I think it's one of those issues they've got to be very, very careful on. But, you know, two Democrats voted against it, and half the Republicans voted for it. So they might know something.
I think the precedent that you both have described is what is the worry, that once you get into the habit of expelling people, it's just like impeachment.
Recognizing that
he's a hot
mess.
We started having impeachments everywhere. It just started to become normal. Innocent until proven guilty. There's a lot of charges out there. But, you know, the report came back. I was looking. He's using his campaign money for porno sites. He's using it for Botox. I mean, I think half those Republicans were like, I don't want to own that. I don't want to own that story when I'm running. You know, he needs to leave. That's awkward.
It was as political as it was anything.
Yeah, so I just think they're like, ugh. This guy.
Yeah.
So
it was interesting.
I can see the practical
happen.
Reason why, but the precedent is something you better stare at and hope you don't see it for other reasons.
We've said unprecedented a lot over the last few years. So here we go. One more unprecedented thing. Thank you both for coming and having a good conversation. This has been fun.
Heidi, it's always a pleasure to be with you.
Can I say what porno on the broadcast? Am I allowed to say that?
Spencer,
you can say porno. I don't know if you should like describe the porno so we can see it in our mind.
Yeah,
you know,
I didn't say the site name
that.
Of it. I just said, you know, porno sites.
Heidi, you're always a pleasure to be with.
Well, thanks for
hanging
out. And
you're so informed. It's fun to be with somebody.
I'm informed because you guys inform me, so I'm just a student here learning from you guys. So thanks so much for being here.
It's always a pleasure to be with Greg.
Yeah, it's good to see you, Scott.
We haven't seen each other.
What I love about this is that Democrats and Republicans, I'd say breaking bread, but we have no bread together, just sitting down and playing nice together.
Well, the real truth is that there is common ground on public policy, but it does hurt the brand, and everybody's used to everybody fighting. That's what it's supposed to be.
I need more calm in my life. So thanks for being a part of it. Thanks for being here today, and we will be back next week.